Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the program this week.
Before I was a teenager, I think I started to feel that way. I didn't know what was it, but I did start to feel that something was off.
And did you feel that that was something that was explicitly said to you, or was it more about the culture that was created around the arena, if you like?
I used to be scared of going to a doctor because I knew I was going to be sent to rest, and my coaches will not like that because they wanted me to keep doing gymnastics.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. I really appreciate you checking us out. A quick apology right at the start that we had. Well, I've had a really, really busy couple of weeks. I've got a big new project coming up, which I'm going to be able to tell you more about in a couple of weeks' time. It's a mental health project. It's also got a strong podcasting element as well, which is slightly different to what we'd normally do at Mental Health Monday. But I will tell you about it in the next couple of weeks because it's really exciting, which is why there was no actually podcast last week. So apologies for that. Stand by, though, because I've got something really special coming up in the next month or so, which I can tell you about. This week's conversation, though, is with a brilliant guest who's recently given a TEDx talk about her experiences. She's in the UK studying, but she spent her childhood years growing up in Ecuador. Gabriela Santa Cruz is a fantastic speaker about her mental health experience. And actually, her story is about her own journey, but also tapping into something which you may have heard about recently, which is about the difficulties that some young gymnasts have faced growing up in a world where they are obviously seeking perfection, but you have got coaches who are trying to get perfection as well. And the idea that there are blurred lines between someone wanting someone to achieve at their highest level and actually that getting into a much more negative space. And it's interesting to hear Gabriela's experience of that and her perceptions of her experience, how she looks at it now compared to how she saw it back then, based on her mental health journey and the impacts that she saw that it had on her later on in life. She talks about how she went into therapy and how actually she started to draw on her experiences of being a young gymnast to really get her head around where she was at in the modern day. She's in a much better space now, which gives her the opportunity to look back at that time and talk about things like when she was a young gymnast and almost wanting to be injured because then she could take rest as opposed to having to fight through injuries, push through difficult boundaries when really her body was saying you needed to rest. Eventually her mind would catch up and say, whoa, no, you're going too far. She's a really strong advocate for it. I get a link to Gabby on the social media through our podcast notes, and she's a really great talker and is hoping to use her experience to really expand in this area. So it's been great to get her story right here on Mental Health Monday. Started off by talking about her experience in gymnastics and at what age did she get into it?
So I got into gymnastics when I was 4 or 5 years old. My mom took me to my first gymnastics class.
And that's obviously a very young age because it's something that you then pursued then for a long time.
Yeah. So in gymnastics, the thing is that the younger you start, the better. And they usually don't let you start after you are like 8 or 9. It's too late to start gymnastics. But yeah, my mom took me because I had a lot of energy and I was always running around the house and everything. So she took me to gymnastics and I chose to stay.
And how much of a big part of your life did gymnastics become?
It was a huge part of my life. Like since I started, I was a student athlete most of my life. So I went to school maybe for 7-8 hours a day, and then I went to gymnastics 4 or 5 hours after that. And I practiced 6 days a week. So
4 or 5 hours, 6 days a week is a huge amount of time that you were spending. And just tell us about as you got older, just where that journey took you, that gymnastics journey took you, because you obviously performed at high level.
Yeah, so I think when I was probably 8 or 9, I made the state team. And since then, I started to competing national championships, national games, and I did some international championships as well. Yeah, so it was like basically competing. I think I had 4 or 5 important competitions throughout the year. And then a lot of smaller competitions just to like internal tests and things. But yeah, it's a very competitive environment, and you have this pressure to be competing all the time because you're evaluated all the time.
I was going to ask you that. Did it feel like you were doing gymnastics all the time? Was there no sort of break from it? There was no holiday from it. It was constant.
It was constant. Yeah. Even when we had holidays, I used to practice more hours because I was not going to school. So we were scheduled to do a morning practice and an evening practice, or during the summer, we did more hours, like 6 or 7 hours a day. So yeah, when I was not in school, I was in gymnastics.
And were you always enjoying it? Were there elements of it that you always enjoyed, or were there elements of it that you also didn't like? And at what point did you start to reach that moment where you thought, actually, maybe this isn't going to be something that I want to be doing for much longer?
So the first, I think, 5 years were very enjoyable, but then you grow up and you're a bit more mature, and you start seeing situations from another point of view, and you start to feel that stress as if you don't want to go to gymnastics anymore. So I started to feel that maybe when I was 9 or 10 years old. But the thing is that I took a break, like maybe a weekend that I didn't go to practice, or a week. And then I was like, fine. So what do you think is okay? I just needed the rest. Like, I was just so overworked and I just needed the rest. But yeah, when I was like 10, before I was a teenager, I think I started to feel that way. I didn't know what was it, but I did start to feel that something was off.
I guess with gymnastics, it's very technical, isn't it? So you've got it right or you've got it wrong. So it's a very definitive line. You can't go, and here's me styling out something a bit artistically. You've either hit the jump, you didn't hit the jump, you landed the jump, you didn't land the jump. And I guess the element of that, there's a routine to that, if you like. The practice is either, you're either perfect or you're not perfect. And I wonder if that's quite hard to deal with, because you're almost trying to be somebody else's goal. You're almost trying to reach something which somebody else has defined, as opposed to reaching something that you want to define yourself.
Yeah, so I think there's two things there. Like, if you're not perfect, it can be very dangerous for you, because you can land in a wrong way, you can get injured, you can get like very bad injuries if you don't do it perfectly. So that's one part, that's one side of that perfection. And the other side of that perfection is this one, when you have to meet some results, some expectations from your coaches or from the federations. So yeah, you have those two responsibilities there.
And the conversation particularly in the UK, I know that also in the United States, recently has moved towards the fact that actually the pressure that's on young people to be perfect and to have the perfect sort of physique for the sport, and that you've got to be perfect with all your moves. There's sort of, the evidence is moving towards this idea that in some circumstances that's moved towards almost, it becomes the word abuse is used around, that it has passed beyond somebody demanding perfection of something. It's actually somebody now almost punishing someone or trying to get them to reach unattainable goals. I wondered if you have sympathy for those sorts of stories. But is that something you sympathize with?
Yeah, I think there's a very thin line between working hard and being abused. And in gymnastics, you usually go beyond that limit. I have seen, like, watching the Athlete Aid film for me was like the main trigger of understanding what really happened to me. And there's stories everywhere. Like, I think the most famous ones are in the UK, in the United States. But if you dig more deeply, gymnasts all over the world have gone through this. And it's very difficult to realize that you were part of that. And when you see like this high level gymnast been through that, is a bit, it's complicated, because we were not in the same level of gymnastics, but we did face some of the same level of abuse. So at the end, that's proof that abuse doesn't lead to the results, because even if we all were abused, not all of us are Olympic champions. So It's a complicated thing to realize. It was very hard when the documentary came out. And your family, it's even harder for them, I think, to understand that they took you to gymnastics for you to have fun, for you to grow, and then to 20 years later realize that there was something wrong there. So,
can you give us an example of where you feel like lines were crossed in terms of demands that are placed on young athletes?
So I think the most normal one is not respecting your injuries. I used to be scared of going to a doctor because I knew I was gonna be sent to rest, and my coaches will not like that because they wanted me to keep doing gymnastics. And when I got my medical diagnosis and I was told like I have an injury and I have to be out of the training for maybe 3 weeks, I was just pushed aside, and I was just ignored for those 3 weeks until I was able to come back. And yeah, that leads, first of all, to this psychological struggle that you go through, like you don't want to go to the doctor and you just have to push through the injuries and through the pain and that's it. And then when you're older, you get chronic pain and chronic injuries that will never heal. So you just have them for the rest of your life. So I think that's one of the most normal ways of the abuse, just not letting you go to the doctor or being mad at you for having a check. And not being sensible to when you're expressing that you are in pain or you have some sort of issue.
And did you feel like that was something that was sort of explicitly said to you, or was it more about the culture that was created around the sort of the arena, if you like?
I think it's both. I mean, some coaches are very expressive about telling you, don't be dramatic, just tape your ankle and keep going. But also you see that the older girls go through the same thing and the younger girls are going through the same thing. So you're just in a position of that, yeah, it happens to everyone. So everyone is told this and everyone just tapes their ankles, their wrists, and they just keep going. So yeah, it's the system, but it's also the treatment you get if you decide to speak up. So yeah, it's both. It's implicit and explicit.
And did you speak up? Did you raise concerns? Or was it more that subsequently you've looked back at and heard other people's stories and thought, hang on, that has echoes of what I experienced?
Yeah, for me, the realization came after. Like when I was in gymnastics, I did feel like something was not right. And you feel like a lot of stress for being such a young person. And you're like panicking about going to a practice, or you're scared of one coach. You're scared of your mom taking you to the doctor, but you don't really realize what's going on. Like, why is that happening? But yeah, the realization came when I watched all these stories from all over the world, and you look back and you say, like, yeah, like when you, not even my parents treat me like that. Why is someone stranger telling me this? But yeah, when you are in it, everyone goes through it. So it feels so normal. Like the girls younger, the older ones, past gymnasts, everyone has gone through it. So it's normal.
Can I ask you obviously a lot of that emphasis appears to be from a physical point of view, which is, you know, strap up your ankles, let's get back out there, let's carry on physically pushing yourself. But obviously we're talking about mental health as well. So what does that do to you mentally, or what can you look back at now and think, actually, because I was being told to this, I felt like this? What were those feelings and emotions that came with that part of the journey?
I think that it comes with the overworking feeling, like you always have to push more than you can give. And you struggle to take a rest, to take time for yourself. Like it just stays in your brain that you always have to be at your 100%. It doesn't matter what's hurting and what is wrong. And I think also the fear, like when my ankle was hurting, I remember once, and I practiced on it for 3 days, I think, and you just have this constant fear of landing wrong and making it worse. But But it's going to happen because you're overworked, you're tired, you're scared, and then you really land wrong and it turns into a fracture. So you're just in constant fear and in constant need to push yourself more than you can do. And that mentally is exhausting. Like, it's the only thing you're focused is the not disappointing your coaches and maybe not being the focus of their anger or their silent treatment. So yeah, it's a weird thing that happens in your brain when all that goes on.
And how sustainable is that, if you like? How long can you go on with those feelings before your brain sort of gives up on that situation? You know, does your brain give up before your ankle gives up, or does your ankle give up and then that gives your brain a chance to relax because you can't do the thing? Because yeah, what order does that happen in, do you think?
I remember sometimes even wishing to be injured because I needed to rest and I needed to be ignored. Like, I'd rather be ignored than being under this pressure. But yeah, usually the physical part gives up first, because when your brain is tired, you're not eating well, you're not resting well, so your body is weak, and it is the first one that's gonna break. And then your mind is like, oh, like, finally I have some time to rest because I'm injured. So it's a really weird and scary feeling, wishing you are hurt so you can rest. But sometimes you're like physically fine, but your brain is giving up. And you just, like, I remember I used to have like crying stages of just crying for days during the workout, the practice. So I just got there, I warmed up, and one little thing went wrong. And I was just crying and crying and crying. I was still doing my routines and everything, but I was crying all the time. So I think if you are in some sort of pain, the body will give up first. But if you just are in a stable physical way, your brain is gonna, like, you're even gonna have anxiety attacks of crying, or you get blocked. Like, you cannot do skills that you were able to do yesterday, for example. So yeah.
Before the last Olympics, there was a very senior member, probably the most famous member of the US gymnastics team, who said, I'm not going to partake in a way that you expect me to partake. Still got involved in and around the team sports, but individually said that she wasn't in the right place. You must have had a great deal of empathy and understanding of what she was going through.
Yeah, when Simone did that, some people were saying, like, how can she do that? Like, she's disappointing everyone. And she's standing there in the Olympic stage and she's just giving up. And I was like, oh my God, that's what I would have hoped I did when I was smaller. And I would have loved to have the chance to say, you know, I have a team and they are able to compete right now. I am not. And the thing is that when you're not mentally in the right place, you put yourself in danger. She was having these blockages, the twisties that we call it in gymnastics, when you basically lose the sense of where you are in the air and you get lost. And that's very dangerous because you can land it the wrong way because you don't know where you are. So she decided to step aside because she was putting herself in danger. And I felt so proud. Like, when people asked me, I was like, that's the right thing to do. Because you can have a panic attack on the Olympics and in a practice, but it's the same feeling. And she has all the right to step aside and let her teammates perform. And as a leader, I think she was the leader of that team. If you are not in the right headspace, you influence your teammates as well. So you can bring them into this confusing, anxious mindset. So I think it was a great thing. It was amazing what she did. And I think there she opened a door for gymnasts right now to choose themselves and say, like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not in the right headspace to do this, and I'm not going to do it.
You think that gives the opportunity to empower other gymnasts to say that? Some people would argue, actually, Simone Biles is Simone Biles, so she's kind of well-known enough, respected enough, and has achieved enough to almost get the opportunity to say that. But quite clearly, from what you've said, there will be many gymnasts right across the world, many different age groups, who might be feeling exactly the same way. My guess would be that those other people don't feel the same power to be able to say what Simone Biles said. And that, I guess that's got to change, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think that we all have that power to say no and to stand up for ourselves. We're all human, like she's human in an Olympic stage and we're human in a smaller gym, but we are all human and we're all kids and we all grew up in this environment and we all have injuries. Our brains work almost in the same way. So there's no difference there biologically. So yeah, I think that should have opened a door for us to be able to stand up, to make our choices and to tell our coaches or sometimes the parents, the federations, like, I'm not doing this. And setting the boundaries that we were not allowed to set before. But we do need those boundaries to be in a healthy environment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gabby, can I ask you sort of after gymnastics, I wanted to talk about how the mental health impact of what you experienced in gymnastics played out in sort of the workplace. So you're competing competitively up to a point, and then obviously then you have a job, you have to go and, you know, apply for jobs and start work. I wanted to ask you about your experience of how the mental health issues that you'd picked up through gymnastics, how they then did they transfer straight across into the workplace? Did they present in a slightly different way in a workplace? Often so much is still asked of you. You know, you're being asked to give 100%. You want to be perfect in a workplace for your boss or to achieve your goals as well. But how did that crossover work for you into that workplace environment?
That, I think, was the hardest part. Like, I graduated college during the pandemic and I got my first job after. So I did all the hiring process and I'm like very good in assessments and everything. Like all the good things that I got from gymnastics are expressed in this assessment and teamwork. But then when I start to work, I have this mindset of having to be perfect. And also this mindset of not being able to ask questions or to set my boundaries. So when I got that job, I remember after a couple of weeks, I didn't want to go to work. I was panicking about going to work and I was scared about superior figures in the company. I was scared of not reading their minds and be able to do things as perfect as they expect it to be. So that's when I had my breakdown, that realization that I was carrying all these beliefs into the workplace and it's very stressful. Like I was in the office and I went to the bathroom and I was crying in the bathroom while I was in the office because I was so stressed about the work I was doing. I didn't know if it was right. I always had someone shouting at me like, straighten your arms, stand your legs. And when you're in the office, no one is like standing next to you and just checking every single step. So I didn't know where I was going. And you feel like really lost when you are in a healthy environment after such a toxic interactions. It's very weird. It's scary. It feels so new and unpredictable. And your body is just in this alert mode all the time. And that is exhausting.
You've obviously got an understanding there of like, well, I'm normally used to this, but now this is happening. Did you understand that when it was happening? Could you see this sort of bigger picture? Or did it take then a break or time away from an office to think, right, why is it I feel like this? What is it that I need to do to put myself on a healthier path?
The first thing I did was look for help from a therapist. During gymnastics, I saw some sports psychologists because they used to have many blocks, mental blocks throughout the years. So when that started to happen, I was like, and I did a minor in psychology. So I kind of knew that it was like a mental response. So I texted my therapist and I was like, I'm really going through a very tough time I started to talk to her, but the anxiety was so powerful that during the sessions, I was just crying. Like, I could not even explain what I was feeling. I was never in a space where I could say I'm hurting or I feel like this is wrong. So I was just crying and crying. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I just feel I don't want to go to work. This is so weird. I cannot do this. And she referred me to a psychiatrist. And when I started the medication, that's when my physical symptoms started to stop and slow down. And then is when I was finally able to like go through my beliefs and in a more controlled way, understand what was going on and where all this was coming from.
And then have you then talked through with the psychiatrist about everything that's happened right from the start? Were you able to then go, well, actually, it comes from a point of something that you did when you were 5 or 6 years old? Or was that something you offered? Was that something they asked about? How did you then start to frame your entire experience in gymnastics in terms of where you were at from a mental health point of view?
So what I told was, like, I feel like since this documentary about gymnastics came out, I have been triggered all the time. And I think it has something to do with that. Because when I saw it, I remember crying the first time I saw it. And it just hits you like, it's crazy. So I was like, this documentary did something to me. And I think this is the right place to start. Because my family history, my relationship with my parents, me and my sister, there's not huge problems there. So I knew that it had to start from the gymnastics path. And yeah, we had to unblock a lot of things. Like, I remember I was not very able to express my feelings, like talking. So my therapist told me to write like what I was feeling. And I wrote like, I think a 6-page thing about what gymnastics did to me and like basically assessing everyone and everything. So that was the start of the process, just like being honest that I have gone through that situation and that I was like now processing it and I was like ready to work through it and accept it. So yeah, that's how it started.
How do you feel about your time spent in gymnastics? I imagine that you met many people and made lots of friends, were part of a big community, but at the same time, it obviously came with these negative experiences. How do you look back at that time now?
It's a mixed feeling. Like, I do love gymnastics so much. I even went to the World Championships last year. But I also have this maybe resentment to the system, because I know that most of my abilities and my qualities come from the life I had as a gymnast. So I'm very organized. I am a team player. I am very hardworking. I'm very detail oriented. So that is attributed to my life in gymnastics also. And I have very cool friends that I talk. They're far away, but I talk to them every once in a while. And we were very close because we grew up together and we were spent like weeks together, even more than with our own siblings. But yeah, my resentment is towards the system and how they let all of this escalate so much. So yeah, it's like a mixed feeling. When I see gymnasts performing, I'm like, I do think in the back of my head, like, I wonder how much abuse has she endured or they endured to be in this arena today. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed feeling. It's complicated. I don't hate gymnastics, but I do have like this anger, I'll say, towards what goes on behind the scenes.
Has anything changed, Gabriella, in terms of those federations? We hear a lot in the UK just because of how high profile it's become. A little bit of that conversation that you hear coming out of the United States off the back of that documentary that you mentioned as well, that changes are being made, that systems are being put in place. Do you get a sense that both at home and away from home that things are changing? There's a little bit more acknowledgement of the mental health impacts that a life in gymnastics can have on a young gymnast and the need to have procedures in place to deal with that right along the journey.
I know they are working on some procedures, but I think most of the pressure is coming from private organizations or separate organizations of ex-gymnasts that are working towards it. The Gymnastics Federation, they are trying to work like in some handbook or something. They have to be really strict and not just put it in writing, so to actually be able to overlook the changes that have been done, that everyone is meeting the rules, to talk more about it in a louder way, I'd say, while institutions don't accept this, there's not gonna be like a huge change because it all comes from the top and then it leads to the gymnasts.
Can I ask you now you're in the UK and you're studying in the UK, that those pressures that you were placing on yourself from a mental health point of view and the stress and the anxiety that you were dealing with, are you able to cope with it better now? Do you have strategies that you're able to employ that allow you, if you start to get those feelings, to step down a different path or to recognize that you're heading towards potentially a difficult place?
Yeah, like since moving here, of course, it was a huge change in my life, and I'm here alone. So it did trigger these kind of feelings of being lonely, being anxious. But yeah, with through therapy, you work out in certain techniques that you explore, and then you finally see which one works for you. But yeah, for me, it's definitely having a routine. I have to be outside, like even if I don't want to, I have to take myself out of the bed and I need to go to Tesco to buy something and come back. Like that's everything I need. So I try to even force myself and tell myself I need to get out. Like just a walk around the block and that's it. So that one works for me. I need to keep my routine, like my waking hours, my sleeping hours, having my meals. I like to watch a lot of movies, so I try to watch movies that make me calm. And when I'm having an anxiety episode, I have learned to take my time. So I go to a maybe a bathroom or outside, and I just breathe. I take my time to calm down, and I'm not trying to push through it, because when you try to fight it, it's worse because you're just so confused and you feel like everything is like pressuring you. So you just have to take the time to step aside, take some deep breaths. For me, it works, having like a sensory feeling of something cold in my hands or my neck. And when that's, even if I take 20 minutes and I come back, but I'm like relieved, if, rather than trying to do my job while I'm in this mindset. So yeah, I have learned a lot about myself. There's a long way to go because the things don't heal so quickly. And even though if you understand what's going on, the wounds are still there. So it's a very difficult, complicated, no, there's no recipe to heal that.
Now,
So yeah.
it sounds to me huge, though, that having come from a culture where you had to push through, keep pushing no matter what, that the fact that you've even able to get your head around that during a difficult time to set yourself aside a bit of time to not push through, to accept, deal with it, and then come back, even if it's only a 20-minute period, I think that's a sign that we can all grow through our experiences and find new ways to deal with it. If there are people listening to this now who are always using the same tactic, which is, to push through a problem or to put your head down and carry on and hope the problem goes away, you can learn different skills. You can learn a new way of doing something.
Yeah, and when you push through all that pain, you don't make the right decisions. You put yourself in danger, and you're not acknowledging yourself. So you're not giving yourself the space that and the place that you deserve in your own life. But it's very hard, like coming from that culture. For me, it's very difficult to feel like I'm not being productive. Like when I'm just laying in bed, I'm like, oh, I feel like useless. But yeah, it's important to understand that we need to rest and our brain needs to rest, our body needs to rest. And it's not okay to just push through when we are not feeling like we can do something.
No, absolutely. Great advice. Great advice. Gabriella, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being so honest about your story, your journey so far. We wish you all the best with your studies in the UK and whatever the future brings, and look forward to seeing what you do next. So thanks for speaking to us on Mental Health Monday.
No, thank you so much to you for giving me this opportunity, and I hope this helps as much people as it can help.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.